championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform you can find. Today we're going to be taking a look at the spring game that is coming up tomorrow and tell you what we are looking for, what we want to see, what we don't want to see, what we expect to see, and how much we can actually take away from the spring game. Then get into the recruiting aspect as Texas, Oklahoma, and A&M are all having their big recruiting spring game events around the same time. So who's showing up to Oklahoma, Texas, or A&M, and what does it all mean? So, Joe, how's it going, man? How's your day?
It's good. Just most of my master's picks look pretty good so far. I think pretty much everybody I have in various pools and daily fantasy stuff, they're all in red numbers, so with the exception of, I think, my amateur. So that's pretty good for me.
Yeah, I'm the exact opposite. I had my brother able to convince me to throw in $80 on a Calcutta with Jordan Spieth. As soon as I handed over that $80 to him through Venmo, I was like, I'm never seeing this again.
Yeah.
He's now, what is it? What is he at right now?
He was 4 over last I checked, but he's not.
That not was looking too good.
That was a misguided purchase.
Yeah, I immediately was like, this is not going to end well, at least for this $80. But, I mean, what can you do? It's been a fun tournament, honestly, the Masters. Seeing Woods actually look decent has been fun, especially when he came to the Dell match play. That was awesome. But I guess this isn't a golf podcast, though, is it?
No, there are people who know way more about it who could talk much gooder than I can about golf.
Yeah. We've tried to play a few courses together, and Joe can attest to me not being that great, and I can attest to Joe not being that great. So let's go ahead and get into something that we can talk about, which is the spring game coming up tomorrow, today being Friday. I guess we're recording on Thursday, whatever. With everything that has happened in the spring practices, it now all kind of boils down to this. And a lot of the spring game kind of gets taken into a microscope and then exaggerated. So, mm-hmm. So then the question is, when you're looking at it under this microscope and when you're watching it live, what are the things that you want to look for? What are the things that you want to see? And what are the things you don't want to see while you're looking under this microscope? Let's go ahead and break this down. And this is kind of your thing, your segment right here is, 5 things that we want to see and 5 things that we don't want to see.
Yeah, do we want to go back and forth? Or
yeah, let's go back and forth
here. Okay. So here's the first thing I wrote down on something I do want to see. And I have a mix of big picture in particular here. I want to see good play from the backup tackles. I feel no matter who that first string guy is, obviously it's going to be Sam Cosmi on the left and could be Derek Kerstetter or it could be Denzel Okafor on the right. I think, and you know, by all reports, that group has done a decent job. There's more to be, always more to be wanted from that group, from, you know, those right tackle options, but they've done a decent job to where the first string line does pretty well. The question is that second team. The second team line has, you know, even Tom Herman said this past Saturday, took a step back. Have not been doing well. So I'm very curious as to how those second team tackles will play. And I think if you want signs of progress for that second team, it'll be there. It'll be from a guy like Christian Jones, who's, you know, struggled with some ankle injuries. And I'm not exactly sure his availability for the spring game, but he, you know, even after some places were reporting he'd be out the rest of the spring, he was back out at practice doing some drills the next day. So we'll see, you know, what exactly he's capable of doing. Tyler Johnson, I want to see how he does. He was Texas's best offensive line commit in this past class and is enrolling early. He gets a lot of guard reps, but I'm curious to see how he does at tackle. And then someone like Reese Moore, somebody who's spent a year in the Yancey McKnight lab and learning a new position. I want to see what he looks like. Kind of a different prospect than Christian Jones was, but they had to make a lot of, you know, a lot of new changes to their game that though they weren't the exact same changes, the process was very similar for them, adding something that they hadn't had to do a ton at the high school level. So that's really what I'm curious about. I want to see how those second team tackles do. I think that'll be easy to tell. You know, individually, you'll be able to glean a lot from them, despite what maybe Rashawn Johnson or Casey Thompson does at quarterback. Any positive performance from them would probably undo a lot of those concerns Tom Herman had 1 week prior.
Right, especially since you don't know what your right tackle situation is going to be going down the road. If you can find a guy who in live situation, under the lights, can shine, whether that be Reese Moore, Christian Jones, Tyler Johnson, Denzel Okafor, whoever, if you can find a guy who can shine under this, or at least have competent play from all of them, where you feel like you're not really losing something by putting somebody out on the right tackle, then I think that's a plus, and that's something that you do want to see as a Longhorn fan. As you said, competent play, and that kind of plays into one of the things I want to see out of this offense, and specifically the offensive line, is good communication between the offensive linemen. That is something that is so important as an offensive lineman, and something that you see great offensive lines have and bad offensive lines not having. When they talk about having a good offensive line glue, that's what they're talking about. Communication and understanding between the left guard, the left tackle, the right guard, right tackle, the guards and the centers, all of that. That's what they mean. It's good communication. So if there is a stunt, being able to pick it up and do it well. If there is a blitz coming from the second level, being able to communicate that very well. And I hope to see some of that communication coming from Zach Shackelford as a senior leader on this offensive line, being able to pick up different blitzes or different keys to tell some of these guys like Derek Kerstetter or Tope Mate or Denzel Okafor, make them aware and able to pick these things up. So, and you saw during last spring game some major communication breakdowns along the side of Patrick Vahe not being able to pick up a stunt. We saw that last year during the spring game, and that turned out to be a problem during the year. So communication early on here, I feel like, will be a big key going down the line. Joe, what's another thing that you want to see out of the spring game?
So because this offense, we can get into this a little bit, but because the offense probably expects to be pretty vanilla, what I want to see is some run stuffs at the line of scrimmage. I feel like that's a general enough thing to where it'll be a sign of progress, because not only have we heard that the offensive line in the run game has been pretty successful this year, it's been that way basically throughout the entire spring. So because they're going to probably be going up against a pretty vanilla look as far as the offense goes, I want to see the linebackers and the defensive line, you know, all five that they're replacing, make some stuffs at the line of scrimmage. If you watch Ayodele Adeoye's film from high school, it's something that he's really good at, and the additional element to his position of playing in space has been a little bit of a struggle for him, but reading between the tackles was one of his strong suits, and I want to see him make some plays there. I want to see Jeff McCulloch make some plays from you know, playing inside the box and show that he can also be reputable there playing that rover spot. And then I want to see some of the defensive linemen, you know, shoot off some blocks and make some tackles. That was, you know, each of these past couple of years, Texas has had a true disruptor on the defensive line, whether it was Puna Ford or Charles Omenihu. They had somebody who garnered attention and made it easier for other guys. You know, if you see some defensive linemen make some run stuffs near the line of scrimmage, that'll be a sign of that. And it should, you know, be a sign that even though they're going against a pretty vanilla offensive look, that there's a capability there to show some defense against a run game, even though it hasn't been prevalent this whole spring.
Yeah, and I'll add on to that. One thing I want to see is the defensive line getting penetration against the pass as well. You're talking about the run, but I think one thing that was mainly missing last year was passing penetration from the defensive line. If you can get at least some pressure on these quarterbacks, at least some, you know, a sack or two, I don't think that so much speaks ill of the offensive line as it does, hey, this defensive line has made some sort of a stride towards being legitimate. And in a passing league, you need that. You need some ability to get some passing penetration against a team like Oklahoma, against a team like Texas Tech or Baylor. That's what you need. And if you can show that in this spring game, that you have that ability, I think a lot of the questions about this defense might start to be massaged away, especially along the defensive line, because a lot of people are like, where is the ceiling for this defensive line? They don't think it's very high, but if they can get a guy like Roach to be explosive, a disruptor on that defensive line, then I think could massage a lot of the questions about this defense.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the three down line is going to be difficult to produce pass rush, consistent pass rush, since you're not playing guys outside the tackles very often in a five technique. But at the same time, with that understood, Texas needed to get a little bit more than just what they got from Charles Omenihu last year. And that's what I think that's a very smart thing to look for. It's not that you'd have to demand your best pass rusher be a defensive lineman in this defense, but that they need to do a little bit more than what they did last year.
Right. What else do you want to see out of this spring game?
So I realize that everything I want to see that I wrote down was from offense, just because I guess with on defense, with all the safeties being with basically all the safeties having some sorts of dings, I'm not exactly sure what I want to see from the defense. So I'll go ahead and stay on the offensive side of the ball and say I want to see a long play from scrimmage. I understand that means the defense probably messed up somewhere, but let's see a long play from scrimmage. Let's see that, you know, even that you're at least capable of it, I guess. And I know Tom Herman and Sam Ellinger mentioned, you know, they had plays of 47 and 48 yards last year. That's fine, but let's see something that's like 70 yards or something like that, and gets the crowd excited a little bit.
Oh, I completely agree. Texas hasn't had a big play since John Bird against Oklahoma State 2 years ago. That was a 90 something yard reception that really was just him breaking away.
Yeah, and it wasn't even a touchdown either.
Right. Again, seeing something like a running back breaking a big run, which is something I want to see out of this game. I want to see a running back break a big run, but specifically, here's how I want to see it. I want to see it be Jordan Whittington running the inside zone and busting through off of a good read. I don't want to see a outside release and then, oh no, there he goes, you just can't catch it, because that's not what this offense is. I want to see an inside zone from either Keyonte Ingram or Jordan Whittington, them making a good read, and then them bursting through, and then getting to that second level, that second gear, and going for 70 yards or something along those lines. A passing play would be good too, but it wouldn't mean as much to me as seeing the running backs get an explosive play.
Yeah, I think that'd be huge too. And based off what we've heard, it sounds like that's very possible. It seems like that happens at a decent clip in scrimmage, and some Texas social media and various reports have shown that. So back on offense, this time under center, I want to see how Casey Thompson does passing the ball. Any expectation about Rashawn Johnson, it's just going to be one of those things where don't look like a deer in the headlights.
Right.
I feel like at this point in his career, as long as he does that, that's about as great as you can expect for a spring game. For Casey Thompson, the coaches rave about his athleticism, his speed, what he can do on the move. But if he's going to be a reputable backup quarterback, he's got to be able to show that he can get some of these passing concepts down, make the throws, keep his eyes upfield, and instead of always looking to tuck and run, maybe stay in the pocket a little bit longer. I want to see him do some of that. It should be a lot easier for him to do that in the spring game, considering he's not going to get touched. I don't want to really see him tuck and run, because that's not worth anything than just 6 bonus yards, essentially, in a spring game with him in a non-contact jersey. So I want to see him stay in the pocket, maybe a little bit longer than he would in a normal game situation, and really show that he's got the passing part of the game a little bit more down than he reportedly did last year.
Right. I want to see a big jump in his game from what we saw in last spring, which last spring he actually played very well. But if you can see a Sam Ellinger-like jump in his play, then I will feel good about competent play from your backup quarterbacks, which, knock on wood, you're more likely to see them play next year than you're not, because Sam Ellinger, as we all know, likes to play with his head going forward as his battering ram. So he is prone to injury. Therefore, if what we're going to see out of Casey Thompson is really going to speak a lot about what we're going to see next year, because there's going to be one game out there where you're relying on Casey Thompson to be competent, to make throws. And that's what I want to see out of Casey Thompson. You're right, is him be able to stick in the pocket, deliver a ball to the correct position, understanding the wide receivers and them understanding Casey Thompson. I want to see Casey Thompson look competent so that when it comes to that time next year, we're not freaking out as much, because we're still going to be freaking out. And speaking of quarterbacks, that goes to one thing I want to see, which is Sam Ellinger making those around him better. That is going to be something huge for Sam Ellinger, and that's what you see out of all of the good quarterbacks. Sam Ellinger, this might be homerish, this might be very homerish, but has an outside shot at a Heisman next year, an outside shot. So how does he get that? It's doing what other great quarterbacks have done and making those around them look better, because with the great play from around you, that's what gets you the Heisman. If Sam Ellinger can fit balls in and make defenses second guess, then I think he can make a huge improvement over what he did last year. Joe, I don't know, what would you look for that means that he's making those around him better?
If he can just continue to be accurate and put the ball in the right place in the passing game, his legs, the constraint he provides in the run game, are going to open up plays for other receivers, for running backs, for tight ends. That's just how this offense works. But he's had, you know, two big targets last year were his primary targets, in Colin Johnson and Lil Jordan Humphrey. It's not really so much as a concern as or anything like that. It's just, you know, continue to prove that you can put the ball in the right spot. If you can do that, especially when, you know, your slot receiver could be 6'1 this year in Josh Moore or a handful of other guys. One of your receivers is probably going to be 6'0 or 6'2 and Devin Duvernay and Sean Burt, depending on what Brendan Eagles might do. I think there's just going to be an emphasis on accuracy this year. Not that he was inaccurate last year, but just continue to do that. And if you can do that, then there's a lot of concerns that go away, if you even want to call them concerns.
Right. I think another thing that you can look for to make sure, or to kind of check off, yeah, he's making others around him look good, is him distributing the ball to different wide receivers. Because last year, you know, you had three guys. You had Colin Johnson, you had little Jordan Humphrey, and then sometimes you had Devin Duvernay. If you can distribute that ball, if you can say, all right, we got Brendan Eagles the ball, we got Malcolm Epps the ball, we got Josh Moore the ball, we got Brew McCoy the ball, we got Devin Duvernay and Jordan Pouncey and all these guys, they got the ball and they looked good, then I think you can say, yeah, Sam Ellinger is more than just little Jordan Humphrey and Colin Johnson. He is able to make those around him look good by putting the ball in an easy-to-catch position. So, Joe, the last thing that you want to see out of this offense, what is that?
I guess I have two of these little spots, but they kind of fit in together most likely. I want to see what slot receiver looks like, and I guess as a result, I want to see what Brew McCoy looks like, if that's where they decide to align him at. You're replacing little Jordan Humphrey. You're replacing a guy who's got a good chance of getting picked in the NFL draft. Even if he doesn't, that's still a huge drop-off. You're losing 1,000 yards of production and the Swiss Army knife of the team, the best player on the team, as Tom Herman described. So I want to see what the offense looks like without little Jordan Humphrey. If it is Brew McCoy, then, man, that's exciting. You know, top 10 player in the country, a huge name to pull from California, directly from USC, as it turns out. I think me and a lot of other people are real excited to see what that guy looks like in his first time under the pseudo lights.
And yeah, speaking about the slot wide receiver, one thing I did hear from camp is Sam Ellinger tends to prefer the bigger targets, i.e. Malcolm Epps, Colin Johnson, guys like John Burt or Brendan Eagles. But that means that he kind of misses sometimes on the smaller guys, Devin Duvernay and Josh Moore. Josh Moore specifically is a guy I heard where if you get the ball in his hands, he's explosive. But it's the fact of does Ellinger get the ball in his hands? Not can he, but does he? So if Ellinger is able to show, hey, I'm able to get the ball and can get the ball in Josh Moore's hands, then I'll be, you know, massage fears, right? That's pretty much what I want out of this game, is I want my fears to be massaged out. I think that's what all Longhorn fans really want. So if you can see that, and I think that's one thing that you're going to be looking for mainly in that slot position as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Just how that looks compared in its new form, because it's going to be different without 84 there.
For Longhorn fans, it's going to hopefully look more like what Tom Herman had under Ohio State and under Houston, which was not having a pseudo tight end out there, right? But more so a speedy small guy out there to really take it to the linebackers, but have some more speed, which is what he kind of wanted out of this position. But the last thing I want to see is I want to see the guys who are supposed to be good showing off why they're supposed to be good, why they're the team leaders. That's Ellinger, Ingram, Cosme, Roach, Shackelford, McCulloch, B.J. Foster, guys like that, Anthony Cook. I want to see those guys show off why they are going to be the starters, why they are assumed to be the starters. If you can see consistent play out of those guys, then I think you have a good enough base next year to be, at the very least, a 9-win team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you put it real simple. They have to be good for this Texas team to be really good. I don't think you'll see a lot as far as, you know, how significant of the development they've made this spring, but you don't want to see anything that really alarms you as far as effort or anything like that. And I kind of doubt that with this staff. They seem to call that out pretty early if there is no effort. So, but yeah, I want to see the good players stay good. I don't want to see any more sophomore slumps or junior slumps like seems to have happened in the past few years.
Right. And this spring game, it's really good to see the new guys coming in and to see, hey, there's no regression in this team, because really the progression for different players comes in the fall, over the summer, when they really get some more time to take a break and learn the offense and then improve upon it in the fall. That's what you saw with Devin Duvernay. That's what you saw last year with Sam Ellinger. It's the improvement over the summer and into the fall. Here you want to see maintenance. You want to see maintaining the status quo, and that's why I want to see those guys showing off, hey, they're still good. But that means that there's a lot of things that you don't want to see in this spring game. Specifically, you know, obviously we don't want to see injuries. That's something that just kind of goes unsaid. It's kind of cheating. If we make one of our five things we don't want to see. But Joe, what is the first thing you don't want to see? Where do you not want to see regression, or how would you see regression or decline in different players?
So the first thing I don't want to see is weak tight end play. We saw what happens with an offense when it has weak or no tight end play. That was 2017 Texas. When it has good to sometimes great tight end play, you see 2018 Texas. So you're replacing Andrew Beck, guy who did a lot for you, with either Cade Brewer, Reese Leto, or Jared Wiley. I don't want to see those guys, you know, if they drop a pass or something like that. Drops are usually, at least to me, it can be something that, you know, doesn't translate to a fall camp. But guys who were getting whipped in the physical part of the game, just not making the blocks they need to, basically doing stuff that would make coaches possibly think, do we need that tight end out there, which would be extremely drastic at Texas. That's what I don't want to see. I think that, you know, you can expect a little bit of a step down, at least, you know, from the Sugar Bowl to the spring game, when you're going from Andrew Beck to Cade Brewer. But I don't, that can't be a weak link in this offense if it wants to be successful in 2018 that or 2019. That it definitely needs to be. It cannot go under what Andrew Beck provided last season.
Right. I feel like yours are going to be more micro. Mine are more macro in things I don't want to see. And specifically, I don't want to see one side of the ball be way more dominant than the other. At least I want to see the defense hold their own. Because that's what I expect. We're going to see what we expect, five things we expect later on. But I definitely expect the offense to be dominant. And I don't want to see them be too dominant. I don't want to see this defense just getting thrown up and down the field, because then that's just, you have big problems coming the next year if that's the case. So one thing I do not want to see is the offense just marching down the field on this defense.
I think you're right. You don't want to see those huge disparities. You just want to see semi-equal play from both sides of the ball and not one side getting too far ahead of the other.
Yeah, zero-sum game. While it's not that fun and there's, you know, it's hard to take away, yeah, because this is going to be great. That's kind of what you want to see is both these teams are pretty equal, because if you can have consistent play from both sides of the ball, then that means you'll have consistent play from both sides of the ball against other teams. So, Joe, what's the next thing that you do not want to see in this spring game?
The next thing I don't want to see is poor wide receiver blocking. I think we can be pretty certain that Devin Duvernay is a very good blocker. He proved it all last season on all those screens that little Jordan Humphrey took, and you know, various other short passing games. He's a plus blocker out there, and that's a position that really demands a lot of blocking. But since he's been working through some injury problems this spring, and there's some, you know, a good competition behind him, I don't want to see guys like Brennan Eagles or Avante Woodard or, you know, any other of the guys that get a lot of run at Z. Poor blocking from that position would not be an encouraging thing to see. Eagles has the size to really bully a little bit, not as much as maybe somebody like Malcolm Epps or even Colin Johnson, but he's got the size, and that's a small concern with Woodard, but seeing Duvernay be able to do it is encouraging. So poor wide receiver blocking in the spring game would be an indicator that maybe they wouldn't be able to rely on that swing passing game that they have so much when Devin Duvernay isn't on the field. You are missing a little bit of a variable with John Vert, since he's still in outdoor track season. And he's been a solid blocker that I can recall over the years. I can't recall any spectacular blocks, but nothing that bad either. But you need for those guys on the depth chart to be able to provide good blocking for the times that Devin Duvernay is going to have to come off the field, you know, to get his rest and in case something worse happened, just because of how important that is to the offense.
Especially with how reliant this offense is on screen plays, bubble screen plays, on the quick slants, on the underneath screen play, with the outside bubble plays to Colin Johnson or to Devin Duvernay. You want to be able to see good, consistent wide receiver play. And when we didn't see that, that was the 2017 offense. That was a huge question mark that Drew Mehringer had after that 2017 season. Huge point of contention for Drew Mehringer. And it kind of got silenced last year after the first game when we saw Colin Johnson, Devin Duvernay, little Jordan Humphreys really start to come alive and prove that they are good to great blockers. So you definitely, I completely agree, you definitely want to see that. Something else that I want to see, or don't want to see actually, is I don't want to see missed tackles. Missed tackles are killer. And that means that there is some misunderstanding or lack of ability from your defense, and specifically the linebackers. I do not want to see missed tackles. I don't want a rerun of, 2016 Texas or 2015 Texas of missed blocks. Last year, that became a problem at some point. I want there to be solid tackles. If you get to him, at least slow them down and then gang tackle. That's what they need. And if they don't have that, then there's going to be a lot of explosive plays against them in an explosive league like the Big 12.
Yeah, you took one of mine. I wrote down no missed tackles up the middle. I guess that expanded not only to linebackers, but a little bit to the safeties. So, yeah, I agree completely. This is because of how everybody knows what the other team's doing, you know, how simple the things look like, how the reads are probably going to be, and any play, base play call is going to be. You just have to go out there and play football,
right?
And do your job, get to the guy and bring him to the ground. Yeah, 100% agree, especially from those linebackers and just safeties in general.
So do you have another thing that you don't want to see? Or
yeah, I'll go ahead and state the other obvious one that might have gone up there with injuries is ball security.
No fumble. I didn't think about that. Yeah,
No fumbles. No what the heck are you doing interceptions. You know, sometimes you're trying to force it into a window and you don't. Sometimes you ball gets tipped, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to see any silly interceptions, I guess, and no fumbles. You know, this was a problem in the last spring game, I believe, with Tenille Carter. And I remember asking Tom Herman about it. Like, you complained a lot about ball security last spring. Do you have this complaint this spring? And he said, no, it's been fine. And considering that's a demand of the program, that makes a lot of sense. But sometimes guys get eyes, you know, big eyes playing on their first time at DKR, even if it is just a practice. And, you know, for one reason or another, ball gets on the turf. That's really what I don't want to see, especially from a running back core that's either young or unproven.
Deep at all.
Right. It's a good way to remain unproven by putting the ball on the ground in practice. So just, you know, competent ball security. No stupid, silly, bad turnovers.
Right. Mine, I guess I'm not going to be able to build on that. You kind of took that one and ran with it. I'll go a different direction. I don't want to see communication breakdowns. That is something that I think is going to be huge. And I talked about that good communication with offensive line, but specifically, I don't want to see it anywhere on the field. I don't want to see palms of the sky. I want people to understand where they're lining up, what they're doing, what the play is. I don't want to see confused guys running around messing up. It means if you don't see palms of the sky, if you don't see communication breakdowns, that means that there's a good understanding of the base of the offense and the defense. That is going to be crucial going into the fall camp. That means you don't have to reteach guys things. That means you don't have to spend time on that, and then you can grow on different concepts. You can have a very solid base of your defense or your offense. Specifically, I don't want to see this from the linebackers and the cornerbacks. I might expect it, but I don't want to see the linebacker position getting abused because they are out of position. I don't want to see the cornerback position hands to the sky. We don't know what coverage we're in. We don't know if we're in man or sky or cloud or whatever. If you see that, then there's going to be a problem going into the year that they need to fix immediately. If there's not, if you don't see that, then hallelujah, this defense might actually be good enough to go with this offense.
Right. That kind of leads into what one of mine was. I said, I don't want to see mental lapses at corner. You know, we with who Texas has at wide receiver, they're going to make plays. I mean, when you're that tall and that athletic, you're going to make plays over guys who are not as tall as you. That's okay. But if a guy gets behind you and it was your assignment, that's what I don't want to see. And obviously that goes into communication. But sometimes that's just on the individual player. And for guys who are going to be true sophomores or redshirt sophomores, basically everybody, Boyce, Jamison, Green, and Cook, I don't want to see mental problems in the passing game when everything's pretty vanilla as far as passing concepts go.
Right.
If they get plays made on them, it happens. But if they just have brain farts, that's not something I would find to be encouraging.
But you also don't want to see them just getting abused. They might be in the right position, but getting abused,
right,
sort of the one side of the ball, you don't want to see them dominate the other. But I completely agree.
And I guess, I mean, I only have one more left because that really touched on a lot of what I wanted to do or what I mentioned. But my last one is I don't want to see running backs try to do too much. Little Jordan Humphrey sometimes last year, unique player, unique situation, but sometimes when he was in the running back, Sam Ellinger sometimes in his running roles, and then even Keontae Ingram and at times Trey Watson, they try to do too much. And that doesn't need to be something that your two or one main running back does, especially in a room that's so unproven. You don't need to try and do too much, not only just because A, it's a spring game, but B, there are other weapons to help you out. You shouldn't have to try to do too much. And if you are, it happens. Take the three instead of trying to, you know, run 20 sideways to get one, is basically what I want to see, especially from a young running back like Jordan Whittington. You know, I know he tries to, I'm sure, and I have seen with my own eyes how he is able to rely a lot on his athleticism, compared to other, you know, other opponents that Cuero was playing. That's not really going to be the case at this level. He's going to have to follow his assignment, go where the play is blocked for instead of maybe trying to go where it's not blocked for and get around an opponent. You go with what's there. Don't try and become too creative because then you're just creating problems.
Yeah, I agree. And specifically, I don't want to see them try to bounce it out all the time. I want to see good, hard inside running because, again, that is what this offense is built on. It is built on the inside zone game. If you can get that down, then I think you're good. If they are relying on the outside zone runs for guys like Jordan Whittington, then there's a problem there that you're going to have to figure out how to fix. So I completely agree. And honestly, I didn't have a fifth one for what I didn't want to see. I couldn't come up with one off the top of my head. If you have another, feel free.
I don't. I was running short on them too, but I think we covered a ton.
Right.
I couldn't even think of five things I expect to see. I got to about three.
But I think one way we can kind of summarize, or at least for me, one thing I think we can summarize what we want to see and what we don't want to see, and basically the question of, you know, how and where can we see signs of progress or decline? What I want to see, or what we want to see, what Longhorn fans want to see, good plays caused by a player who made the play by making a correct read or an insanely athletic play. What Texas fans do not want to see are good plays caused by a player who is exploiting another for making the wrong read or messing up big time. That is what you don't want to see.
Yeah, I agree completely. If a guy puts a spin move on somebody, then, you know, great spin move. But if a guy, or if a defensive lineman, you know, just is unblocked, that's not what you want to see. To put some concrete examples down.
Right. But, Joe, what are you expecting to see out of this game? When you were going in here, and it's just like, Longhorn fans, this is what you are going to see.
I'm expecting to see a considerable amount of linebacker rotation. That's, you know, going into the season, replacing, you know, two senior starters was going to be one of the biggest questions, and it seems as if Jeffrey McCulloch has one of those spots pretty safely locked up. And then you got Joseph Osai on the outside, same thing. I just want to see what guys like Caleb Johnson, Adelia Deaway looks like, what different combinations of guys in those middle two spots look like, maybe even some of the walk-ons. A couple of them have been getting some high praises, and if that's, you know, if your third string linebacker is a walk-on, I want to see him make some scholarship level plays. I also just, you know, I want to see how Byron Vaughns does against the ones. I want to see stuff like that. So I expect to see a good amount of linebacker rotation, just so the coaches can get some more eyes on, you know, different combinations and you know, what works personnel-wise.
I can definitely see that. On the other side of the ball, I expect to see a lot of explosion from the offense. This offense is loaded, very loaded. Sam Ellinger, Jordan Whittington, Keyonte Ingram, the wide receivers, Brew McCoy, all the Devin Duvernay. You have good play from Cade Brewer. You have Samuel Cosmi, Zach Shackelford. You have so many weapons on this offensive side compared to a lot of questions on the defensive side. While I don't want to see this, as I said, I don't want to see one side of the ball be more dominant than the other, I expect it.
Yeah, and I think that's fair considering, you know, like you said, the experience factor at really important positions on both sides. I guess the other thing I expect to see, at least in the running game, is pretty bare bones. You mentioned it, inside zone, maybe some outside zone. Texas has a roster with three pretty good runners at quarterback, but I don't think you'll see a lot of them pulling and keeping. Like I said, just because they can't get brought to they'll be in their non-contact jerseys, and B, you won't really get much from it. I mean, he'll take the obvious read, pull outside, get about 6 yards, and then they'll blow the whistle. And you know, they may people may be wondering why the defensive end crashed down, but it's a spring game. I mean, of course he's going to crash down. The other guy can't get tackled. So I would expect to see a lot of bare bones stuff, not a lot of quarterback run. And I would expect to, you know, limit what you take away from the offense because of that.
Right. On the other side of that, I expect to see a trick play of some sort somewhere. You're saying it's going to be bare bones. It's bare bones, bare bones. I expect there to be a trick play in there. And I understand what you're saying by it's going to be bare bones. It means we're probably not going to see crazy formations out there and them trying to exploit different things with different, you know, different formations. We're not playing formation science out there is what you're saying. But I still expect there to be some sort of a trick play because, again, this is a practice. They're going to have fun with it. They want the players to have fun with it. They want the fans to have fun with it. And what's more fun than a trick play?
Oh, I definitely agree, and that, you know, I it'll get people talking about the spring game, wanting to go back, and, you know, it's something that lifts spirits. That people know that's a ton of fun. So I don't know. Who do you think is going to be the trickster? Who's going to be the player that the play is the focal point of?
I'm expecting a wide receiver pass of some sort. So
sort of
what we saw, what was it, against Kansas State, right? Where Sam Ehlinger was the wide receiver. And we saw it in the Oklahoma game, right? The championship, right?
Title game. No, the Sugar Bowl. Well, we saw it was unsuccessful in the Oklahoma game because it was Keontae Ingram passing.
But I expect that to happen. Something like that, or a wide receiver pass of some sort. I'm not quite sure what it will be, but I'm expecting it. It's going to happen. But, it's just because they're trying to let the guys have fun. This is supposed to be fun for them as well. So another thing that I'm expecting to see, though, is the left side of that line be dominant. I expect Samuel Cosmi, I expect Zach Shackelford, and whoever that left guard is, to be steady and be concrete, be a wall.
I agree. That's a strength of the offense right now that I think you're going to see the coaches rely on early. Until they can kind of build out the rest and turn that into a strong unit. But you know what you have in Sam Cosmi. You know what you have in Zach Shackelford. Yeah, I would expect to see them do pretty well on the weekend. And then the last thing I have down, it touches on what you mentioned a lot of, is you probably won't see a bunch of different formations. Just expect to see a bunch of 11 personnel. Tom Herman loves playing with the tight end on the field, and they don't want to give anybody any glimpses into, you know, some of the crazy stuff that they could do with, you know, multiple backs on the field. They've talked about installing it, and maybe they'll show one or two different plays, but I think it'll just be one of those things where the plays are very much the same. The personnel is different, and they don't really utilize the personnel that much at this point. They just kind of run the same plays with those different guys in. So I don't think you'll see anything that truly exploits mismatches with personnel so much this game. I think it's just going to be mostly 11 personnel.
Right. And to that point, you're saying, it's going to be vanilla. You're going to see this, and they're going to be what the base of the offense or the defense are going to be. Again, I'm going back to communication. I expect the offense, the communication there, to be solid. The defensive side, though, I expect to see breakdowns. I definitely expect to see them. You're talking about the lack of experience, the lack of seniority, the lack of guys who are actually supposed to be out there, like Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones. Caden Stearns is kind of a field general. You're seeing guys who are trying out new positions, like Jeffrey McCulloch. You're seeing guys out there who you've seen communication breakdowns happen before, like Kobe Boyce and Josh Thompson out there. So I expect to see it. I hope to not see it, but that's what I expect. It's going to happen at some point. But Joe, I think the biggest question that you can always bring into the spring game is, how much can you actually take away from this type of game?
I think you can take away from individual performances, but if somebody makes some great plays and shows off something that's pretty impressive, you know, when somebody makes a play, a wide receiver makes a diving catch or something like that, you can take away and know that, oh, he's got a pretty good game. But you can't take away a ton as far as schematic, strategy, anything like that. And you have to remember, it is, for all intents and purposes, it is still practice number 15 or practice number 16, just a scrimmage or organized in a different way. So I think you can appreciate individual performances, but maybe so much on a team level, there's not a ton to really jump to a conclusion about.
Right. And even with communication, and if there are breakdowns there, again, this is the spring game. They have an entire summer. They have an entire fall to fix those type of things. So even if you see communication breakdowns, I'm not going to take too much away from it. I don't want to see it. I think it could be a precursor going into the season, as you saw last year. But if there's still so many questions coming out of this game, because there are so many people that are going to be coming in the summer. There's so many things that are going to happen over the summer. There's guys who make huge jumps like Sam Ehlinger, Devin Duvernay over the summer. So there are a lot of questions that come out of this game that you just cannot answer. There's not really a lot you can take away from the spring game, especially since it's a zero-sum game against each other.
It's not going to, you know, be a drastic turnaround, most likely, before now in August.
Right. It also depends on, you know, what we see. If it's the offense marching up and down the field on the defense, then yeah, I guess you could take away that the defense has some big questions, but if it's a zero-sum game, then there's not really much you can take away. But another big part of this spring game is not so much what's on the field, but what's happening around the field, whether it's the fans, the experience for the fans. I mean, Del Conte is trying to make this into what they have at Ohio State, Clemson, Michigan, A&M, where it's a big festival. People come in and they actually want to be there. And another part of that off-field experience is for the recruits. Texas is having a huge recruiting event. I mean, Oklahoma has all these official visitors coming in, but Texas has just a big list of guys coming in, a huge list of guys coming in. And especially given the battle that's going on right now in state between Texas and Texas A&M and Oklahoma for a ton of guys and them all having their games, it used to be on the same day, but now within a day of each other, you're looking and seeing, okay, who's going where? Who are they actually really targeting at these specific positions? So it's been fun to watch the game, the gamesmanship, especially between the different universities.
Yeah, for sure. And then you know, previously you could add that element of, you know, somebody going to A&M in the morning and then Texas in the afternoon. Doesn't look like that's going to happen just because A&M's moving theirs to the night before. And, you know, Texas's situation really worked out well for them. The time that the spring game is supposed to start, the weather is supposed to be fine. If it was at the same time as A&M's, it would not have worked most likely. And that's why you saw A&M have to move theirs to Friday. So Texas's good luck is definitely having to do so more with the weather, I believe, than other schools folding and being like, oh, we should have ours at a different time just so we can get our own recruits and stuff like that. Because for Oklahoma, in that case, you have to change a lot of stuff with official visitors, which could, you know, it's not an easy thing to do that, and it seems like they're still going to get it done. Same thing with A&M, even driving there. It's not preferable, and I think that's kind of why you're seeing some of their visitors list maybe not dwindle, but maybe not be as strong as Texas is right now.
Right, and Texas's list is huge. And let's go ahead and start off with, we'll go down the line, but some of the bigger, we have a list in front of us, Joe and I, just to kind of background on what we're doing here. We have a list in front of us of the guys who have offers from either Texas, Oklahoma, or A&M, and are going to either A&M, Oklahoma, or Texas this weekend. And one of the biggest names out there in a year of just big names at the running back position is Bijan. Again, don't come to us for pronunciation guides here. But Bijan Robinson out of Sal Point Catholic in Tucson, Arizona. Actually had a friend who used to go there. But anyways, he has offers from all three of the schools, but he is visiting Texas.
Yeah, definitely a big deal. This is another member of the rotating musical running back five-star chairs, or the game of musical chairs for five-star running backs. And Texas is doing work with all of them. They're going from Arizona to Maryland to Texas to California, and this is the one from Arizona. It seems like they've got a good relationship with him and with a lot of other Arizona guys. So to get him on campus for a visit with any recruitment, always important, and especially over going to rivals.
Right, and especially with the question marks that are happening around Zach Evans. You want to have some backup plan. And with Jace McClellan looking like an Oklahoma guy, despite some wavering here and there, he's probably going to be an Oklahoma guy. You want to have some sort of a backup plan. And in a year full of just legit running back talent, you want to get all these guys on campus. Getting Bijan Robinson on campus for a huge event like this might go a long way in getting him into the fold later on if you need to, or at least convincing him to come back for an official visit during the season.
Right. That's going to be the biggest news thing surrounding him in this weekend, is if they did enough to get him to return to Austin on UT's dime and right, possibly on his own once again, but most likely for an official.
Right. Another big name coming into Austin is Troy O'Mare. And he is also going to A&M the night before. So it's another big, you know, this one is really a huge fight between Texas and Texas A&M. And honestly, you know, I think O'Meara is a great guy, but it's an eh for me, really, in terms of how much Texas needs a wide receiver and what he brings to the table. I think he's a good player. He looks good. He has the body for it. He is kind of leaning Texas at points, but he's also going back to A&M and switching back and forth. But it is still big to get Troy on campus for Texas.
Yeah, I agree. And this will be, you know, maybe the second time, possibly the third. I can't remember off the top of my head. And basically the span of a month that he's been to Texas. I know he's got an affinity for Jimbo Fisher specifically, but he's, you know, it seems like he's just as equally got an affinity for UT. I like him a little bit more than you do, it sounds like, especially after, you know, you lost a do-it-all guy in Demon Demas to A&M. You won't have that luxury, so now you got to find somebody who very specifically fits X, or, you know, a prospect in-state that very specifically fits X, and then one that very specifically fits Z, that, you know, Demon Demas could do all that, or Demon Demas, like, for Williams
David. Demon Demas, yeah.
Yeah. He's the only one of those guys that can do all that. Troy O'Meara's more slotted to X, and if he's your X, that's a great pickup. And, you know, maybe Johnny Wilson was preferred from Calabasas, California, but to win an in-state battle with a huge emphasis on distance and family over your in-state rival at a position that you have shown to do pretty well with, that'd be a very important pickup for Texas if he were to commit to Texas. And it's just, you know, him going to both spring games kind of shows how contentious this recruitment has been in recent months.
Right. It's coming right down to the wire. And you keep on hearing he's going to make a decision soon, and then he pushes it off, and he's going to make a decision soon, and he pushes it off. It really is. This is one of the bigger battles in this state right now. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. And another, I don't know if it's a battle, but a big race is for Chad Lindbergh at Clear Creek, one of the top offensive tackles in the nation. He just got back from a Stanford visit. And he has offers from Texas. He has an offer from Oklahoma. He has an offer from A&M. Everybody wants this guy, but he is coming to Austin alongside Jalen Garth, Jake Majors, Logan Parr. He's coming here, and he's going to be surrounded by guys who want him, are going to be convincing him, and are going to be guys who he's playing next to.
Yeah, and rest assured, this is not Jalen or Jake or Logan's first time communicating with Chad. They're very familiar with each other. This is another very positive point in this recruitment for Texas. You'll be able to sell, you know, whatever Stanford was able to sell on their visit. You've got another chance at FaceTime with him, and you know, you're putting yourself in as good a position as possible. This is a big weekend for this recruitment, I feel like, because it could go a long way into maybe shortening the timeline or maybe putting Texas clearly on top. And, you know, they'll have to go through the process, however long Chad goes through the process. But this is a big weekend for this recruitment, in my opinion, and for him to be for a lot of guys who want him to be on their offensive line to be there. I feel like that's a, you know, a positive that Texas has that other schools probably can't put together.
And I know we don't have this one as one we're going to talk about, but it's an interesting one to watch, is Akinola Ogunbi. How do you say that?
Akinola Ogunbi.
Yeah, okay, we'll go with that one. But he has offers from all three of the schools, but he's looking like he's going to be at Oklahoma. And if Oklahoma gets him, pulls him away after his commitment to A&M and after he decommitted, that is one of my favorite guys in the state at the offensive tackle position or offensive line position. And Texas having to face him, probably not the best thing, but that's just a side note for what's going on, because Texas is not really in the race there anyways. The next big guys, and there's actually three big names that are coming to Texas, and they're being courted by both A&M and Oklahoma very, very rigorously. Vernon Broughton, Alfred Collins, and Princely Umanmielen. All three of those guys making it to Austin would be huge if they do make it. And we expect them to, but they're also making it to A&M the day before.
Right. And I mean,
aside from Alfred Collins, I don't believe he's joining.
Yeah.
He's going.
That could, you know, in an ideal world, that's your defensive line class right there. You know, most of them, you know, no one of them about 2 hours from you and the other two about 30 minutes from you. Definitely big to have all of them back on campus, since it seems like for some of them it's been a while since they have made that trip to Austin, no matter how short or long it is. But
and there's been wavering in their recruitments for all three of them.
Right. So the fact that all three of them are on there at the same time, just win-win-win across the board there.
Oh, yeah. Huge for Oscar Giles, who has been getting his fair share of criticism at the recruiting in the recruiting game. Another big name, and specifically between Texas and Oklahoma, is Prince Dorba. And he did name Texas one of his leaders, I believe, when we talked to him at the Under Armory in Dallas, that camp. But him making it to Austin again, another good thing for Texas against Oklahoma in this race.
Right, and I think that was even before OU kind of – I mean, when you have a Texas and OU battle and you live in Highland Park, you're either going one way or the other. There's no option for both.
That makes sense unless he's got to play for one or the
right. Well, I mean, you know what I mean. You're either traveling north or you're traveling south for the trip for this weekend. You can't swing both like you could for A&M and Texas.
Right.
So, you know – he clearly chose Texas. And it's not like you can make, unless you really wanted to, a lot of driving on Saturday morning to try and make it to Austin in time. But that's all beside the point. He chose Texas this weekend. He chose to go to Texas this weekend over Oklahoma, over the biggest rival for this prospect in this recruitment. Just another positive data point.
Here is one guy who Texas is thought to be the leader of, but he is not going to Texas this week. In fact, he will be in Oklahoma in Keely Ringo. Keely making it to Norman this weekend to hang out with alongside some of his Arizona guys who will be in Oklahoma for their official visits. I'm interested in understanding whether or not, and I probably will talk to Keely after, you know, later on and saying, what is the reasoning behind this? Is he actually interested? I'm sure he is, but there really hasn't been much around Keely in Oklahoma. So this is, you know, could be big news for Longhorn fans. And if it does turn out to be, you know, there's some fire behind the smoke, could be some interesting battles between Texas and Oklahoma for this five-star cornerback.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're going to have to deal with him visiting some big name schools. You have some great recruiters on there. When you're dealing with some five-star guys. And I don't know. I know they went to different high schools. Maybe there's a Spencer Rattler connection or something like that. Who knows? So, but you have to feel better, a little bit better about this visit. Not like you can feel great, but a little bit better knowing that this one's only for, you know, 36 hours, maybe 48 hours. And not too long ago, you had your guy on. You had him on your campus for a week. So,
right. Yeah.
It's just another step in a recruitment that will be difficult to win just because of what type of player you're recruiting.
Right. Another cornerback who is, I believe, one of the best cornerbacks in the state alongside Jalen Kimber and Jalen Johnson, Joshua Eaton, who has offers from all three schools and will be visiting Texas.
Yeah, definitely. And then the thing with Joshua Eaton is that, you know, we've heard a lot about the fast 7-on-7 team. It's put some prominent players at all three of the schools here. Eaton, and as well as his teammate, another defensive back, moving down the list a little bit, Xavier and Alford. They're both on that 7-on-7 team, and will be making another visit to Texas. And those are two, you know, those guys from the Houston area are two of the better defensive backs in the state. Have come from a program and fast that have, you know, put some very good defensive backs on some Big 12 and SEC rosters. And it's just, you know, that is definitely two guys who could factor into Texas's best defensive back class. And, you know, to see where they're at, where their game's at, and where their recruitment's at, it'll be a very interesting details to learn from this weekend.
Yeah, especially Xavier Alford. He is one of my favorite safeties in this class, alongside Chris Thompson, He, I think, is very, very versatile in where you can play him, whether that is nickel, whether that is boundary, or even free if you want. But one of Texas's biggest safety prospects, and a guy who Texas has usually been the leader of, Bryson Washington out of CE King down in Houston, will be taking his official visit to Oklahoma this week. He has offers from all three of the schools, but he will be taking, as I said, an official visit to Oklahoma this week. Let's see. It'll be interesting to see, coming out of that official visit, how he feels about Oklahoma and if there is any movement going that way, leading him away from the Longhorns.
And not only with Bryson, but Oklahoma's using several, or they're having prospects use several prospects use their official visits to get to Norman this weekend.
Including Lantham Ransom,
right,
out of Arizona.
That obviously, with, you know, the spring game being a big deal, they're bringing back some of their all-time greats, putting it on the Friday. They have a musical act as well. They're trying to make this a huge deal. OU's always made this a big deal. Their spring game, compared to some other schools, always made it a little bit bigger deal, at least that I know of, compared to Texas. And they're, especially when it comes to the recruiting front, that's always one of their biggest weekends. So for him to go up during that weekend, I don't think Oklahoma is probably his leader. I don't think he's super close to making a decision either. But to see what happens with him after this weekend, it's definitely something to see. And that may be a school where, let's face it, they have some pretty cruddy safeties. So if he thinks that there's a path to the field a lot faster at Oklahoma than possibly at a place like Texas, you know, maybe that makes a difference in that recruitment. But Washington is definitely somebody to, you know, factor in individually. But overall, just the point of them using so many official visits, it'll be interesting to see not only how that affects them coming out of this weekend, but something we can revisit is seeing how that affects them long term with using their officials already, especially for a wavering type guy, you know, a guy who's visited multiple campuses, and Jace McClellan, who's making his official up there this weekend.
Right. And then let's go to the next class in 2021. There are a lot of guys who are making their way to Austin, who are being recruited by all three schools. Two big wide receiver names in JoJo Earl and Latrell Neville, who are both being recruited, have offers from all three schools, but are going to Texas over the other two.
Yeah, those are going to be, I mean, these are two guys that are in the recruiting process, have done a great job with the recruiting process and starting to, you know, figure things out, but it both have showed a lot of love for Texas. If you ask, I believe at the Under Armour camp, we asked JoJo where Texas stood for him, and he was very positive about it. Latrell also, you know, made sure people knew he was visiting Texas this weekend. So if you're looking for a start to your wide receiver class, those two aren't a bad place to start for 2021. To maybe get those guys in first. I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's some other better candidates to maybe be the 2021's first commit, but you know, those two would definitely fit together and complement each other well in a class.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One being the more speedy, maybe a Z or inside wide receiver, and then Latrell Neville definitely being a possession X wide receiver type of player. But really, the 2021 class will be known for their offensive linemen. That is a class that is stocked, that is just loaded with offensive tackle talent, and you're going to have two of the best players in the state, in the nation, at Texas tomorrow, and Tommy Brockermeyer and Hayden Connor, and then also James Brockermeyer, the center, who is actually pretty darn good, going to be coming along with Tommy Brockermeyer. Although he doesn't have an offer from Texas, and he does have one from Oklahoma, he is going to Texas. So those three guys being in Austin is really interesting, and it's a step in the right direction in a class where getting offensive tackle talent is going to be huge.
Yeah, if Texas expects to have a good season, or if Texas has a good season like they fully expect themselves to, they'll fall backwards into a good offensive line class. There's really no question about that with how some of these 2021 guys are. I think I looked up that there are 42 composite five stars already in the 2021 class, and including quite a few from Texas, like 42 five stars. That's
wow.
And that's not something, you know, some sites limit it to a certain amount. I think what the composite does is if it's above a certain score, it's a five star. And they've rated that many players as being right. five stars this early, which, you know, maybe that's another topic
that
for another
for
day.
Sure.
But this is a stacked offensive line class in Texas.
Yeah. And Joe, real quick, kind of side note, your wish list for tackle in the 2021 class, what is it? Because mine, Tommy Brockermeyer, Hayden Connor, and Donovan Jackson.
See, I probably go Tommy Brockermeyer, Connor, and then I think Jackson is great, but I think the Kenyon Green comparison and being, you know, a great tackle prospect and everything, but maybe an inch and a half of height is very, very valid. So I'm not sure if you throw Savion Byrd in there from Duncanville or
who is he's built
right,
like a tackle.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not sure where you go from there. But I think it definitely includes Brockermeyer and Connor. Probably Fathery then. If I'm not gonna include Donovan Jackson, I have to include Fathery.
Right. And that's kinda, I feel like that's the trio of for everybody's wish list, but I do like Hayden Connor and I do like Donovan Jackson quite a bit. Another two guys who are being recruited hard by Texas but are not going to make it to Texas are Tumiche Adeleye and Landon Jackson, both defensive ends that Texas could very well use, especially Landon Jackson and especially Tumiche Adeleye. Both of them have proven to be very good, but they're both going to A&M and probably will not make it to Austin.
Right. And that's definitely not a positive point in those recruitments, but very similar to Omer, you have to remember that these guys have seen a good amount of Texas over the past couple of months and have said some very positive things about Texas. But Tunmiche, he says a lot of positive things about a lot of different schools. And then obviously with Jackson, he has A&M connections in his family. So they're always going to be in threat in that recruitment.
Right. And of the two, I feel like Texas A&M really, really threatens for Adeleye right now more than any other player that Texas really wants at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's going to be a tight race between these three schools throughout the year. It usually is, but now it has just gone up to another level with Jimbo Fisher because his staff can recruit very, very well, as Texas has found out, to the dismay of a lot of Longhorn fans. So it's going to be interesting to see who shows up to Oklahoma and A&M today and who shows up to Austin tomorrow and take away from it different things. Maybe we'll talk about it in the show next week. But for now, I think that's going to be your 4th and 5. Thank y'all for listening. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Joe Cook, where can we find you? You
can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89 and on InsideTexas.com.
And you guys can find us on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Overcast. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. On that note, thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.